So yes, just as a reminder, this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted to the website. We will start with introductions. My name is Ryan. I'm with Wilson Architects.
Sure.
Mike Odorn,
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Megan Fletcher, Clark County Community Development.
Michaela Rankin, Clark County Community Development.
Seth Halling with AKS Engineering. Yeah. Terry Wallen with Wallman Associates.
April Firth, Director of Community Development.
Noelle Lovern, Government Affairs Director for the BIA.
And those online.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Sherry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Jenny Housley, Jordan Ramos.
Brent Davis, Clark County Community Development.
Ryan Chass, City of the Center.
Jennifer Reynolds, Clark County Development Engineering.
Bud Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Is there anybody else online?
Jackie Lane, nosy neighbor.
Welcome. Guests can introduce themselves too. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Any guests?
William, you might be on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, yes. Yes. My name is William Elliott. I'm here as a guest. Thank you.
Great. Yep. Thank you. All right.
Did Jeff just join us?
Yeah. Jeff showed
up. Kristen. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. You're on mute, Jeff. Yeah. You can't figure out how to get on off mute. Yeah, we know.
Sorry about
there
that.
There you go.
I had a hard time getting in. Jeff Riskin, Kingston Home. Sorry about that.
Yeah. All right. I think we've got everybody from online. So now we'll move to review and adoption of the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes from the January DEEB meeting?
I have, Mr. Vice Chair, and I move for approval.
Second.
All right. Hearing move for approval in a second. We'll now move to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. All right. We'll now move to member announcements. And I actually have one question, if I could.
We have upcoming events first.
What's that?
Sorry. Megan, upcoming
event.
Upcoming
sorry. Events. This is my first time, so.
Clearly.
Okay, so as of yesterday, there was no really specific agenda items in regards to council, but there is Planning Commission work session tonight on comp plan updates with Oliver and Jose. And then there is a public hearing for February 15th regarding the biannual code amendments from Brent Davis. Also, in the last DEEB meeting, I was asked to reach out to council in regards to work plan, and there is an email attached in the back of the packet that has kind of an outline that came this afternoon from them.
Megan, this might be outdated, but on my calendar, I had a hearing for population and housing, BOCC hearing. Did that get moved?
I didn't see anything on there on calendar.
All right.
Things could have been added today, too. That's what was on the Planning Commission and on the County Council calendar.
Were you talking about the 6th? February 6th. I think it got moved.
Did it get moved? Okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I had it on there.
Okay. Any other discussion on the upcoming events?
I have an upcoming event.
Okay.
Jennifer Reynolds has given notice, and her last day will be February 9th.
Aww.
Her position is posted, if anyone's interested.
I'm not qualified.
Jennifer, thank you for your service and working on our board and your work at the county. Good luck to you in your future endeavors. Is it public what you're doing after this?
Thanks, Eric. I'm taking a project manager role with a company I worked for in Houston. I interned with them straight out of college. They gave me a job, first job, and they've kind of reached out to me after I moved to the Northwest like 16 years ago. They're expanding into this market, so I'm going to try a new endeavor.
Wow.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Member announcements. And I have one that I had noted. It was kind of just a question maybe for staff. And it came up because the City of Vancouver just sent out what was their phasing cycle for the new IBC codes. And I guess I was kind of curious if Clark County was doing a similar sort of thing. You know, for instance, like the city's one, it's in order to get vested under the 2018 I-codes, the application has to be submitted before the 15th. I think fees paid by the 29th and a complete submittal by the April 14th or something like that. I guess I was just wondering if Clark County has a similar sort of phasing plan.
Yes.
And it is.
So if it gets, what date is it supposed to be?
March 15th.
So then March 14th at 11:59, you have to have a request in for an intake, a permit intake appointment.
Okay.
So 11:59, yes. Correct. Now we're going to do something different this year than we did the last code cycle, which I think will help, because what happens sometimes is everyone rushes to get that in, and then when the time it comes for intake, they're not exactly ready. So you're going to get a response back from the permit center that says, do you want the soonest appointment, or do you want an appointment in April or May? And so I'm going to go through May, the end of May, doing those intake appointments, but you can choose one now, middle, or later, so that you're not having three intake appointments Yes, Megan.
And the permit has to be applied for
and paid for. Yes.
At that intake.
Applied, paid for before you make your appointment. Yes. So applied, paid for, and you have to request an appointment, and you have to be given an appointment. But they're going to give you options. Soonest appointment, an April appointment, or a May.
Okay. I'm sorry. I guess we don't do a lot of building permit submittals. So you apply, you pay, and then you request for an intake?
Oh, yes. And we will put it out there, too, in writing. We're just trying to, because we are trying this new thing.
What was that date again?
March
14th. At 11:59.
Okay.
So everything has to have been applied for and paid, and then you can request the intake by that date, and then they'll give you, sounds like 2.5 months in order to set that intake date.
Anything after that just has to go under new code.
Right. All right. I have something for
Mike.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Just a quick update on our favorite topic. Still having challenges meeting both landscape percentage and rec space areas on multifamily projects. I currently have one in with staff asking how we possibly can meet those requirements. We're not even at max density on this particular project. We had a meeting with county transportation staff to go over some turnaround circulation issues. So we went ahead and we were required to put in a cul-de-sac, which then kicked us out of compliance with the landscape and rec area requirements. And so, and I have yet to hear back from them on that. So I'm hoping to hear back fairly soon. We looked at some other alternatives with one portion of that particular project to keep the project moving forward. And we still couldn't meet the requirement. That was to remove the cul-de-sac and just take access off of a separate road to where we didn't have to have a turnaround. And we still couldn't meet the requirements, both the 20% landscape percentage and the rec area based on our unit count. So what we had to do in order to meet that requirement was that we didn't drop units, but we dropped the type of units that we're proposing. Which, again, as I've mentioned before, runs contrary to the comprehensive plans, housing goals and policies of providing a variety of housing types and meeting density goals that are set forth. We are no longer going to be doing any three-bedroom units on this particular project, potentially. So it'd be all studio, one- and two-bedroom apartments. In order to meet the rec area or reduce the rec area requirements and have smaller buildings and meet everything. That it's still an issue. We're trying to find solutions. We're reducing the actual size of our project potentially. Which again really runs contrary to everything that the county has been working towards. So I'm hoping that staff at some point in time can come up with a solution to this that is amenable. Oh, and the other part is that, I'm sure those that have been designing multifamily projects that we also have been, we also need to meet certain criteria with regards to the usable outdoor space, and now has to meet the definition of usable outdoor space. And so even if we have a pathway that runs through, it's my understanding, a pathway that runs through maybe a 10-foot wide landscape area, that's not usable because it doesn't meet the definition of usable outdoor space, because it doesn't meet the minimum 20-foot width. Although staff has agreed that they would be amenable and would look at, average width of the outdoor space in order to meet the intent of the usable outdoor space definition of 20 feet in every direction. So that's where we're at. Just want to pass that along to the good of the group and everybody else that's listening. Thanks.
So can you remind me, I recall the decision by the council was that it was a policy issue, and I thought that they were going to take it up later a little in the year. Has it just never been taken up as a policy discussion?
Since it wasn't a clear biannual code amendment to Scrivener's error, clean things up, that and as the council did indicate that it was a policy issue, that it would be the code change to be able to overlap those two code provisions would be addressed within the multifamily housing options that's going to follow the single family housing options, which is still ongoing. So we're kind of in this, gray area of kind of in between codes and whatever, and having to kind of do what we can in order to keep our clients moving forward with their projects.
We had a similar issue, and what we ended up having to do was eliminate some of the units and making them indoor recreation space. Hmm. Which just raised the cost of the other units to make them less affordable, but it met the code then. Hmm. So it just had to add, an unintended consequence on the affordability of those apartment units when we're trying to hit a entry-level apartment for affordable housing. So it just basically had the construction cost was exactly the same, so it just raised the rents on the rest of the units and the per unit cost. But then we could meet it by having recreation indoors that will probably never really be used. It's kind of excess of what's actually needed for the units. But so we do need to get it fixed. And then, you know, also if it's going to be taken care of with the other housing code, kind of the same thing that happened with the cottage stuff, that another one just got kicked and it's like, oh, this should be in biannuals. No, it should be in the update. So whatever's first, it should be in that. And again, I don't know if I think we have biannual code updates on here, but yeah, hopefully we are getting that code up to the cottage stuff back with the housing options where it probably should be, where it's more.
Yeah, we talked about that. I think
the way it was presented to staff, it wasn't that way still. So okay. I'm not sure what's happening, but we're trying to get it done efficiently as possible.
I guess we can find out.
The council instructed us that it can't go through biannual, the landscape versus rec space, which is why it has to go through the housing option study.
Is there an update on where the housing options currently stands in the process? Is it on the council agenda at all? Or
it was a work session.
Oh, good.
And so we're waiting for a hearing.
And that's the single family still?
Single family.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a few comments we still kind of had on that, and I think they're working through those.
When do we know when the public hearing is going to be? March?
Probably March. Can I ask a question about density with your project? You can't meet max density, but you can meet within the range, or you cannot meet. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can meet within the range. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. It's just that we would not be able to meet max density because the other aspect of this is that we are at the very minimum of parking at 1.5 per unit, which is not the industry required. They'd like to have more like 1.6 to 1.8. And so we can't get any more in there because we can't eat up any more of the landscape to add the parking. So it's kind of this thing.
All right, any other member announcements? Seeing none, we will move on to biannual code updates. And this looks like Brent.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a quick update. As you heard, Planning Commission hearing got moved to February 15th. Brian Mattson's actually going to be presenting that hearing for me because I have a scheduled vacation for that week. And then we do have a tentative date for council of March 26th. So hopefully that's pending approval of a work session in advance of that hearing. So we should have that hopefully nailed down next week. And I can give the board an email update when that and confirm that hearing date when it's locked in. And just also in terms of response so far, we've only received two comments to our SEPA and Planning Commission notices. One was a comment from someone involved with the neighborhood associations supporting the proposed changes for the neighborhood association or the neighborhood meeting code for the Type 2A process. And then the other one came in yesterday, which is a request from the Department of Fish and Wildlife to add an additional code amendment in 4350 to clarify that there are potentially some state requirements for certain culverts. There's a section of the code that talks about minimum requirements for driveway culverts, and they're concerned that that, you know, might give the impression that the county can override state law where those culverts may be placed in waters of the state. So I'm going to be presenting that to Planning Commission as to get a recommendation from them as to whether to include it in this batch or push it to the next batch. And so that's where we're at.
Brent, real quick, was that a separate code request that they had, or was that in response to one of the proposed code amendments that are that's in this batch?
It is not in response to an amendment that was proposed. That we did have some proposed changes in that code section, but they were unrelated to this matter. Okay. So, yeah, so it may get carried forward in the next, you know, the next batch. I'm just going to leave that up to the council and the planning commission.
Okay, thank you.
And then there was one other item. I'm sorry. Is there any question? You know, other questions about the biannual code updates?
Yeah, just on the cottage, the garage cottage thing. Is that where is that going now? Is it going in the biannuals or is it going in the COSAP?
It is in the biannuals. So it's,
do you think is that the best spot for it?
I don't, but that is the direction we received from council as to where to put it. So that's where it's going.
Yeah, just one thing that we discussed before, council acted on that based on our recommendation. And our recommendation originally was we needed to do it as soon as possible. That's why it was a biannual, because it needed to happen quickly. And now it has gone to it got delayed so long that the housing options is ahead of it. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to pull one piece that really affects that out of the housing options and put it in biannuals to change a code that is in the process of being changed elsewhere. So I don't know. Like I said, I'd encourage you to maybe take a look at that again. I don't think the direction from council, I think that direction is outdated.
I don't think that the housing option study is ahead of us. I think we'll end up going first. We go in front of Planning Commission on the 15th, and the only thing we have left is a public hearing. I think we'll go first. We're going to be really close.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, it's going to get taken care of.
Okay.
So I don't see the huge risk here.
All right. So there was one other item unrelated I did want to update the board on. In January, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife published new management recommendations for Oregon White Oak Woodlands that have a very detailed protocol for assessing Oregon White Oak functions and values, as well as measuring impacts associated with either encroaching upon or removing oaks. And that also includes new guidelines for oak mitigation. We're still trying to fully understand how that's going to affect our projects. But I just wanted to make sure the board was aware that these, that this change is out there and it is being implemented. We've looked at our code and been advised that the habitat code, the way it's structured, that any projects that are in process and wherein we have not issued a decision, as long as the Department of Fish and Wildlife is recommending in those cases that we use these new guidelines, that's what's being required. And staff has been letting their applicants know that. And so some projects are getting caught in the middle. And I have a meeting with Fish and Wildlife tomorrow to discuss this among other things. And so if Deba's interested in hearing directly from Fish and Wildlife about these new guidelines, I can let them know tomorrow and see if they would be interested in coming to a future meeting to talk about it.
Brent, we've had a couple presentations. We just had one from our environmental group, and I think we all looked at the around and thought, well, gosh, you know, these ratios for mitigation are certainly less than the 6-to-1 that it currently is, and you know, 3-to-1, but it's all based on the canopy cover and the loss of temporal habitat, I believe is correct, right? Is that the correct term?
Yeah, they're looking to mitigate for two separate impacts. One is the temporal loss, because oaks take forever to regrow, and the other is for the actual physical loss, and that they're accounting for those in two separate ways. So I think what you're going to ultimately see is there are going to be some cases where it's actually going to require more mitigation, where you have higher functioning oak woodlands, but it will provide an opportunity for a little less mitigation where the oaks are in a degraded state.
Right. It's based on now a rating system, and that even though the ratios appear on the surface to be lower, there's another multiplier in there, I think, because it's kind of how it is. And so it can take, you know, like maybe your 6-to-1 ratio, and now it becomes a 12-to-1 ratio or 20-to-1 ratio or something like that. We're going to advise our clients not to cut down or impact any Oregon white oaks from now on, unless it's absolutely necessary, because the impact not only, and then if you can buy into a one of the mitigation sites, and that's not automatic, is it, Brent? You can't just automatically buy into a site that you have to try to do it on site as well.
Well, I think Fish and Wildlife is going to be supportive of bank credits for the replacement piece, because they believe that, you know, that it's hard to do and it's hard to be successful at it, and the time scale is outrageous. If there are opportunities to do the temporal loss piece, which is focused more on enhancing and preserving higher quality oak stands, Fish and Wildlife is going to be encouraging that over bank credits.
So one project that I have where a previous owner of a site had removed an Oregon white oak, and then it was purchased by somebody else, and then through the process of development, it was determined that that tree had been removed. He needed to make a $30,000 purchase for the removal of one Oregon white oak. That cost has gone up since then. He got locked in at the opening price of the bank credits. So when you're looking at single trees, start with that as an example of what the impact would be. And then, and that's right, that's current code. So think of how that's going to be multiplied by the new code that's going to be coming out. So that's just kind of our experience with it thus far. Thanks, Brent.
Brent, so I know in some cases, right, there's, you just have no way around what we're talking about. So let's say, I just think of examples of when the county may have a planned arterial, you know, plan, and someone's going to develop a site and they don't want to put a road there, but they have to based off of the county plan. And it requires then an oak that's located in that location to be removed. I'm assuming then you're able to use the bank, oak bank. You know, how, I guess
that's correct. I mean, if there's no reasonable on-site mitigation option for that temporal loss piece, the bank credit is going to be the next choice.
Okay, thanks.
Real quick, Brent, just in case I missed it. So these new guidelines are basically being, I guess, enforced retroactively or right now.
Yep.
And actually we had a couple cases before they were formally published where Fish and Wildlife recommended that we use them in their SEPA comments and provided the information, and our current code states that we must substantially follow the recommendations of the Department of Fish and Wildlife in determining site specific mitigation. And so our conclusion was that while the application may be vested to a specific version of our habitat ordinance, the way that we are required to follow WDFW's recommendations do not vest.
Any guidance on creation of more banks? Because I know that's an issue. And can you, if you can create them, can you create them in areas like adjacent to riparian habitat, or even in riparian, like riparian habitat areas that are degraded, so they actually provide that benefit of habitat?
I mean, certainly we have a new oak bank that came online at the end of December, the Wapato Oak Bank. And they have the potential for a substantial number of credits. Their first phase, they've generated 18 credits. And they have, you know, several hundred acres of oak woodland enhancement they're planning to do if the market supports that, that will generate additional credits in the future. So that's available. We have another project that is still in the prospectus development stage. So, you know, there's no guarantee that landowner is going to choose to move forward, but they are pursuing an oak bank as on that site as well. And that site is east on the other, across from 162nd.
Is that the Thompson Oak Bank?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of opportunity out there right now with proposals that are either, or, you know, banks that are in operation or proposals that are in the works. But if somebody wants to come to the table with another proposal, we're definitely open to that. I would encourage, you know, an early due diligence discussion to make sure that we can support the enhancement and creation activities and that it can generate enough credit to work for your client. But yeah, we're always open to looking at that.
Hey, Brent, with regard to the code and it requiring essentially following those recommendations, when we had attempted to comment to WDFW on their proposed, you know, their recommendation, they said it, because it's a recommendation only, that they don't have a public comment period. And so this seems like it's kind of a I guess you might say, backdoor way of just, you know, bringing in a regulation without the opportunity for public comment. And I was wondering, is there a way that we potentially change the county's code to make it so it's a little bit more predictable, I guess, from a developer's, you know, standpoint, to be able to know what they could expect, I guess, when they come in, and rather than in the middle of a development have those requirements change.
Yeah, and we've actually done that with the critical areas ordinance update that unfortunately is not effective yet. It was adopted in March of last year, but we tied the effective date to the completion of the associated shoreline amendments, which have gotten hung up, and will be the remaining issue with that will be addressed with the biannual code updates. And so we're anticipating at this point, by the time ecology finishes their approval process on the shoreline amendments, that we'll probably have that code in place by sometime in mid-May. But that code does remove the requirement on a case-by-case basis to consult with and follow Fish and Wildlife recommendations. That requirement is still in the code at a programmatic level, but in a case like this, it would give us time to essentially issue a new management decision on how we're going to implement those regulations, as opposed to being stuck with dealing with it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, any other questions for Brent? All right, thank you for that update, yeah. Next on the agenda is some board discussion on the 2024 work plan. And I am going to let Sherry take the lead on this one. I know she was hoping to be able to share her screen. Is that something she can do? Okay.
And I want to make sure she's back. She texted me and said she had an emergency with her kids running late from school.
So. Sherry, yes. Are you there?
Yep, oh. I'm back. Thank you. Thanks,
right.
Guys. The bus was late, and so I hung out at the bus stop for a good 20 minutes, but I'm back. Thank you. Okay, let me pull this up. Okay, can you see that?
Yep.
Perfect. I will hide my, well, I won't hide my comments. Okay, so I took the annual report work plan that Seth sent over from last year, tweaked it for 2023 and 2024. And I just have a few things that I want to run over. And then, of course, if you guys have any changes or things you want to add, we can do that too. And I'll make real-time edits while we do this. So hopefully at the end, we have a completed work plan. One question I had is I noticed in the latest agendas that we had Nick Flagg listed as a board member for 2023. And I don't recall him actually rolling over into 2023. So I didn't list him. I don't know if anyone knows that information or not.
Yeah, Sherry, I looked, and his term actually ran through March of 2023. So, yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so I will add him back in. Okay, maybe I won't. And who's he with, Clerk?
Clark Public Utilities.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, thank you. All right, perfect. Okay, so then Ryan and I met and discussed the 2023 accomplishments. I basically took the 2023 work plan, copied it in here, and then made some edits regarding what we accomplished. I won't go through them line by line unless you want to. I highlighted the number two, streamlined customer service, based on a conversation that Ryan and I had. We didn't necessarily add this to 2024. We feel like we provided some feedback, but we didn't necessarily provide a lot of feedback because it wasn't an area of topic, other than just a short update later in the year. So
yeah,
I guess my question, go ahead.
I don't know as if we need to necessarily keep this in here. I think the updates, we're getting update. April's been really good about providing us updates on that, as well as the update to from LMS to whatever it is now, Project Docs. And it appears that that's going fairly smoothly. I think most of us have others in the office that maybe do that for them, but we have access to it ourselves. So, and I haven't heard any grumblings. So, that's something that we probably just want to put on to monitor. But I don't think it was necessarily an accomplishment that we had this last year.
Okay. And I think that that's where we ended up putting it is down here. Yep, monitor. So that we can continue to provide improvements. Okay. I didn't have a whole lot of questions in what we did do. So most of my questions are what we want to do for 2024. The first thing I have is under item one, work with the county staff on the 2025 comprehensive plan update. So our number one topic of conversation in our last meeting, when we were talking about what we want to do for this year, what had to do a lot with the impacts of the middle housing, as well as now that there's the income component to the projections and what the housing, forgive me, I don't speak the lingo, I don't remember the terms, but in talking with Ryan, we weren't sure if that needed to have its own designated section because there's so many components under that, or if we would lump that under the comprehensive plan update. I know we had talked about with the rules around the levels of income that there might be some issues with capital facilities, trying to achieve the greater density, a lot of that conversation. So does this kind of sum up what we talked about? I need to expand that anymore?
Which one are you talking about?
Item number one.
Yeah, she's talking about what our role will be this coming year in terms of the comp plan.
Oh, update. I see. Okay.
You know, I think part of the issue is that because the comp plan has the component for a variety of housing types and things like that in it, how, you know, there's the single family housing committee and it'll be a multifamily housing committee that are all providing update or recommendations. So I don't know. I guess I'm not sure what our role in terms of the comprehensive plan will be for those.
What we've typically done, and Jamie, is Jamie on today?
No, he's on.
Is he? Okay. Okay. We've typically just provided input when we've gotten updates from Oliver and Jose on the comp plan updates. They're kind of bound by state law to a certain extent. And what we recommend is more, hey, here's what the boots on the ground, here's how it affects development, here's how your policies and goals affect, you know, what we're working on, and then we look at it through the lens of how then are these goals and policies implemented, and that's usually the implementation processes through the zoning code, and so that's really what we do there. I don't know as if it's anything specific that we need to necessarily list in this list. We can indicate once we get updates, how we might see, especially from the climate standpoint, I know that's an item that's on the counselor's email, how that would affect development, if at all.
Yeah, we have, I guess, served on subcommittees, the vacant buildable lands model, the factors that go in. Even though there's guidance from the state, there's a lot of holes too. So there's a lot of decisions that have to be made, policy decisions, and we do advise on those. So, I mean, the way we have it in here is pretty good. One of the biggest challenges with this one is going to be implementation of 1220. So that's that income level criteria.
Mm.
So I don't know that we need to change anything. I think you have it laid out pretty well.
Okay.
So I think we just kind of, that's one that is a push. I mean, we're going to be working on this. It's going to be in our 2025 plan, too.
Yeah.
So it was in our 2023, 24, 25. And then we'll start working on the next update as soon as we're done with this one. So this is an ongoing thing.
Okay. I will leave that section as is. We did add in item number 2, was not on our previous work plan, and that's to review state bills as they're related to development and how they will impact our county.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing, like you just said, Eric, we built 2022. There were a couple others that had come up. We know that that'll probably be an area of discussion.
And really, I think, just to jump in real quickly, I know we've talked about it before, but typically those bills target cities, so they don't always directly target counties. But, you know, as we've all mentioned, Clark County is kind of an unusual one. And, you know, in some of them, I think there's some real opportunities, you know, that I don't want to put on a lawyer hat, but, you know, there's some opportunities for maybe voluntary compliance on some of those bills, or maybe, you know, even though they're technically directed to cities, they're kind of directed to Clark County as well, just because of the nature of Clark County. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. Go ahead.
Sorry, I had one quick question. On the 80% AMI, I know because that's just going to be such a big factor in just what this topic is. Are we going to have anything that helps for us to kind of understand and define how county sees that? Right? Like everything is kind of, we get their state codes and guidelines, but then it's how the county may interpret what that means, or maybe there's guidance that's been provided that interprets what that means. And so what is the rent associated or the price associated that's assumed then that equals that threshold for that? And then we are more so the boots on the ground that can say like, hey, what zoning provides for that? And it to me, we should definitely have input on that, I think, as well as Planning Commission. But if it's just, to me, it's a bit ambiguous without some defined rents. So I don't know if that can be, that's such a critical piece since it's going to make such a large aspect of how we grow going forward. It's something I guess I almost would want to have more than a singular bullet point. It feels like it needs to be a bit more expansive. I don't know.
Yeah, that's one of many. We're talking about the state mandates. Yeah,
I saw number two.
And there's so many different ones. I think we probably need to keep it broad because we don't even know what's coming out this year.
Okay.
And there's stuff coming out. However, what you were talking about is definitely part of the comprehensive plan. I don't know if you were part of the population forecast work session. We're going to need to probably visit on that, and we could get into an hour discussion on that. So I don't want to bring it up now, but with the stuff you just mentioned is pretty significant because when you look at the actual cost, we went through an accounting exercise of how much housing we need for those income brackets. But I think once we look at what the rents have to be and what the house costs need to be, we're going to find out that we can't even build that. So it's impossible. So we're not going to be able to achieve that. And we're going to have to give input on that, but I don't want to get into the weeds on that right now. Right. It's on our work plan. So, and we'll be diving into it.
Hey, Eric, I think you had saw it on the counselor's recommendation, that email. So I don't know if you saw that yet.
It's a lot. The last page in our packets was the email from council. So
yeah.
I just was wondering if we took how council worded it and then kind of added specific language so they can see that we're specifically addressing those questions that wouldn't that probably would be helpful. That's where I was headed with it. Is I agree, keep it broad, but maybe add another sub detail that just shows that we're focused on that specific item.
Hey, Sherry, do you have a copy of this email from council?
I do not. So if you want to send that to me, if someone can send that to me, then I can use their language for that.
Again?
One.
Oh, you did? Okay. You might want to check your email.
Oh, okay. Perfect. I'll check my email.
Yeah, there's some in there that I think align with what we already have in there. And so just might want to make some wording changes to have it more aligned with what they were talking about. But I'd rather go through your list and then see if there's anything different on the council list.
Perfect.
I think three is right on the money. Been
awesome.
On there for a while.
And then number four, this wasn't, I didn't change anything from what was before other than I added the arterial atlas based on, I think it was Seth was talking about in our last meeting. And I didn't know, Seth, if it was a code change or if it was something bigger that needed to have its own section.
I think it's part of that comp plan update and it's reviewed as part of that. We could make a recommendation if there's specific areas that should be looked at and reviewed.
Would you like me to add that as a bullet under comp plan then?
Yes, please.
And then the last two, the gross floor area and the rec space, Ryan and I weren't 100% on where those landed and if they need to remain on our work plan or if we can remove them from our work plan.
I would leave the rec space. I mean, staff already has draft language for that, but it's still something that we're going to have input on because we might, based on actual implementation of some of that code, we might want to propose some changes to that. And I think the gross floor area definition is being addressed right now.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can probably take that one off.
Okay. Item five was identify business processes that can be streamlined to reduce redundancy and use of county staff time. And this is another one that I did not change. I just made a note. Do we want to keep the road mod one
yep.
in there? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, they've started the kind of a pilot process. Good segue. How's that going? the streamlined 90-day review with those projects that you were?
I know that we approached the applicant to make sure that they wanted to proceed, but I don't know where it's from that.
Okay. So, yeah, let's keep that on there. The road mod, road mod item should stay.
Sorry if I missed this, but is that road mod committee still active?
It's there. I think it's April, Jennifer, David Jardine, Gary Albrecht.
Well, I think we should leave it on here. I think until they have a replacement for Jennifer, it's probably not worth diving back into it.
Yeah,
we're probably going to work with the new leadership when they have it.
So I think identify areas on M. I think you could strike such as combining fully complete checklists in type 1 versus type 2 review thresholds. Well, I mean, the thresholds are there. We've never had any issues with those. And we've already got the fully complete checklists out there for type 2 and type 3s. So I don't see the need to have that. That was completed a year ago or more. So that's actually something that we could put on. I think that was accomplished in 22. Yeah. So that can come off. But leave the identify areas and processes that could be streamlined or better communicated. You know, kind of those same thing with the last month when somebody came up with the landscape certification.
Perfect. Okay, so the next section, work with the county staff to implement the findings from the Housing Options Advisory Board. Where did we land on the cottage housing? Is that something that can come off of that section?
Hopefully that's done by the time we meet with them, and we can call that an accomplishment. But we probably should include still working with staff on the implementation and review of how it's working on the stuff from the single family. So right now, the single family stuff's about done, and we'll be moving to multifamily, but there's still going to be review and kind of just kind of checking in. So we could add something like that in there and change it to that.
Maybe monitoring?
Monitor.
Yeah, it will
like
monitor
that. Monitor and, you know, monitor the implementation.
Yep.
Are you thinking for the cottage, specifically this one, Eric, the cottage or the entire section?
No, all of them. All of it. Okay. All the for the first phase of it, the single family phase.
Okay. To implement. So would you change anything of how it's worded? I'm not sure if I followed you.
I would just change the one on the cottage code, because we already, the single family should be adopted to basically monitoring the implementation and monitoring of the recommendations from the single family.
Mm-hmm.
Code changes.
And then just change this whole right here to say single family.
Yeah, and then the other ones look good. Yeah.
The rest can stay.
That look good? Or would you be more specific?
Yeah, the only one on R, we could say City of Vancouver and other local cities, because other local cities are also going to be implementing similar changes.
Okay. Anything else for that section?
I think that looks good.
So number 7 wasn't something that we talked about in our last meeting, but I didn't want to strike it because it was in our last work plan, so I didn't want to strike it without talking to the group first. Is item 7 an area that we will focus or plan to focus in 2024?
It's a little outside of our purview, I think. Those are ongoing supply chain disruptions in deep. I like T. I'm not sure what we can do with S.
We talked about changing road standards and sections, the sections. So I don't know that we need to pull it out of there. It's something that may come back up, but it was on road sections and looking at how to create new road sections that would be structurally equivalent with the materials that we have readily available.
Yeah.
And right. More environmentally friendly as well. So I say we keep it on there.
Yeah.
Perfect. The next two were items, I should say, so number 8 was something that came up, that there will be upcoming stormwater changes. Those don't take effect, in my understanding, until 2025, and that won't be released by Ecology till July. But I didn't know if we wanted to be more specific or change that in any way.
I'd say keep it. It's a good placeholder regardless.
We're always dealing with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a year that's gone by that we haven't in some way, shape, or form.
Perfect. So then number 9, the GIS updates. There wasn't anything specific that was given to me, so I didn't
more
really know
talking
what
talking about the vacant buildable lands model, or?
Well, I don't know exactly. I do know that April shared feedback after the meeting that it only updates once a week, so there's a delay there in the process because of the system. But I don't know if there's anything else regarding that.
I think GIS has been updating way more quickly and efficiently than what they have in past years. So I don't think there's anything that we need to review as far as that's concerned.
I think it's the plat conversation that we're having. The time between you get between when you have final when Mylar to when you actually get to apply for building permits, and there's a gap of time in there that it was brought up to analyze that we might be able to shorten that time frame up.
Well, that's not a GIS.
That has gotten faster.
It is GIS. Funny because they have to be the ones that put it in, so the layers go over it. Yeah, and that we don't have a parcel number until GIS puts it in. But for the county, we figured out something we could do. So we'll allow you to make the appointment right when Mylar, so that, because before that, I didn't know this, but this made me analyze it. Before that, the permit center wouldn't even let you make an appointment for 10 days after GIS updated, which was giving you up to 20 days to where you couldn't do anything.
Oh, wow.
So now once Mylar happens and you go to record it, now we'll let you at least make the appointment, which appointments are 7 days out.
And then trickle down affecting the different jurisdictions like that around the very particular.
A lot of our systems won't allow you, it won't allow you to even apply for a building permit without a parcel. And so there's trying to figure out ways to dummy it, but we're analyzing that.
So is this something that might be a monitor GIS updates vis-a-vis final plat recording / building permit applications? Something
mm-hmm.
like that? Did you catch that?
It's in the improvement of timelines, permitting timelines. It's within that.
Okay.
One thing too, like from what Brent mentioned today that would be curious is, and I didn't catch this, is are we seeing buffer increases off of Oaks, what was mentioned with White Oaks, and then is that reflective then in GIS, or when should we expect that? So we kind of, you know, so when you're looking in feasibility on projects, you know, is that, it's always really critical to understand when those updates get added. And
yeah, can we talk about that at the end?
Yeah,
real quick, because that's almost a separate topic.
So I guess in general, I just would say I think it's a safe thing to leave on there.
Oh yeah, definitely. But we might be adding a new item based on what you just said. I'm thinking about this a little bit more. So we might just have a new item to add. So yeah.
Yeah, I could.
Let's see, development timeline of any consultants.
One that Noel just brought up is the WUI, which is the urban wild urban interface wildland. Yeah. Wildland.
The old UNOS?
Urban interface. No, it's more about fire.
Oh.
Yeah.
It rates your fire.
Susceptibility?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, depending on where you live. It can make you require a certain amount of fire flow or sprinklers or.
Oh.
And the state.
Yeah.
Is working on expanding it, and I think that's the only thing that's holding up the codes right now, right? The 2021s. Yeah. It makes a lot of Clark County in WUI that isn't in it right now.
Yeah, it's a very arbitrary old like DNR map, and DNR doesn't even recommend it. But I think it even affects stuff like venting on your roofs as well, and decks. So it's pretty substantial, but it's. Yeah, they have, like, I think some very urban areas on it for wildlife that probably shouldn't be.
And I think that's what's delaying the code for right now because it's part of the 2021. So I believe that's they need to figure that out before it moves forward.
There is some legislation that is trying to achieve some refinements in the WUI so that right now it's like the interface, but they're trying to do an intermix where the restrictions won't be quite as stringent. So we'll see what happens during this legislative session.
There's actually a lot of jurisdictions that don't have WUI, and we do. So,
yeah.
And I think that ours is pretty accurate. So it might not affect us as much unless they make us adopt that DNR map, which then puts a lot of urban Clark County into.
Yeah. I guess I would just say it might be something for DEEP to be monitoring and responding as needed.
So just to clarify for Sherry, who's typing this in here, what do we want to say from the work plan? Monitor and help with the implementation of WUI code changes? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Is that
and maybe
part
spell
of the
it
GIS
out.
Update?
Specifically the map.
And
is that part of GIS updates?
Clark County doesn't have any control.
Or is that a separate item?
No, but I'm sure at some point it'll be an opportunity.
I think we need to leave it really vague because we don't even know what our scope's going to be.
Okay.
But it's on the radar.
Okay.
So just something very vague about, you know, reviewing and commenting and assisting where necessary.
Would this be under section 9? Or a item?
Yeah.
It could go under 9 for GIS, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I see. She took 9. 9's
oh,
under,
no,
9.
Yeah,
okay.
9 is under GIS updates.
Okay, well, no. She moved it. She moved
oh,
it.
Okay. It could be.
Okay,
code.
So what am I saying?
Yeah. No, that's fine. That's good. I think what you're
doing.
Oh,
just leave it as it is?
No, you can add what we were talking about so that we keep it on the radar.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So, Eric, you
what
summarized
is
it really well. What did you say?
Wildland urban interface.
Wildland urban. WUI. WUI. Okay. Wildland urban interface.
I don't know what the extra I is, though.
I don't know what the extra I is.
Is it two I's, though?
No.
No, I'll just leave one. One I.
Okay.
All right. I think all the rest can remain on there, but we need to change e-plans to project docs. Under, yeah. And that's docs with an X. Right?
Technically,
in Vancouver, you use
project.
I just
made it.
Looks
okay.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah, good the job. Rest looks good.
We're ahead of schedule where we normally are on this because I know normally we're very last minute. And yeah, so good job.
Okay, so then on to the email.
The first one is working with county staff on a comp plan update. We've already got that. New climate elements, so we already have that as an item in here as well. Yep, well, number one. Biannual code changes, yep, we have that. Working with staff to implement findings from the housing, yep, we have that. We talked about the 80% AMI. Do we have that as a, do we need to list that as an item, separate item, Terry?
I would recommend it as like just a sub point.
Okay, under which one?
Under the comp plan.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. That, right there. Looking for ways to reduce development timelines. That's always on here. Is there a way to set timeline targets for various types of housing? DEEB advising on reasonable processing times for various types of development. The timelines are actually better here than they are in other jurisdictions, so I'm not concerned about that.
That's kind of an ongoing thing that we keep on it.
Yeah. Just get it. Yeah. Could DEEB provide recommendations around code meaning and help to resolve technical disputes that may be dragging on for a long time? That's actually one of the reasons why this board was created.
So we could add a bullet point that matches that. And Sherry, do you have that? I tried to send it on the phone, so you have it too.
Yep, I have it now.
So
Thank you.
You have it? Okay, yep. So the bullet item that says, could DEEB provide recommendations around code meaning? I would do that verbatim and just say, DEEB provide recommendations to code meaning. As a board, we are here to kind of review things like that. If there's a discrepancy between what an applicant might think and what staff might say, staff has kind of taken on we had a meeting of the mind in our planning meeting on Monday, and here's what we came up with, and don't ever try to change our mind because we've drawn a line in the sand. I think it needs to be a little more flexible because that's only one side that they're looking at. It'd be nice to get DEEB involved with those decisions as well, especially when it comes to code interpretations and things like that. I've been on the kind of the losing end lately of those, so I'd like to bring that back to where it's more of a
collaborative,
excellent word, collaborative approach to code interpretation rather than just having staff make the decision themselves. Again, and we've said this before, that we'd like to staff to start with yes rather than start. How can we say yes? How can we say yes rather than how can we keep saying no? So, advise on the best ways to support dark sky efforts and limiting noise. Oh, right.
When is our scheduled date for meeting with council?
End of March.
Sorry.
That is something I wanted to discuss at the end of this
okay. Of
her discussion because I have dates here when we would just need to present there. We would need to give them the packet ahead of time and then schedule a date, and we can do that. I can do
okay.
that today.
Okay. So I guess my question is do we want to, you know, when it talks about staff, you know, when we talk about staff and interpretations, do we want to get into any, is there anything that would still be open related to comprehensive plan update and different interpretations that are guidelines from the state regarding that specifically?
As to how staff is interpreting the guidelines from the state and how they're
going
to be implementing it?
Like VBLM language, is there anything like that that we would want to like specifically key in on?
I don't know if we know.
I think we want to avoid over, too much detail. It's already in there. We still, I think, have that in our work plan, and we're still monitoring it and changing it, and we're still working on it. So it's already in there, but mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to get into too much detail on what
I guess my
doing.
Concern is last time when we met with council, though, there wasn't really, did we have the back and forth that we typically would have had, and will that opportunity be provided? So is it more of a necessity to be more detailed because of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think on our work plan, we want to be general. But then on the individual topics, we need to dive into the weeds on it. And we, so we were on a committee that probably was 2.5-3 years, and it kind of really went on a roller coaster ride on vacant buildable lands model, if that's the one you're talking about. And now it seems like we're pulling it back out and looking at it again because of new state rules and almost everything we did on the first one.
Where's
where my
head
thrown out?
It's because of that.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
how does that get interpreted with the additional units? How many additional units will actually come from that new law? And that's, there's different states where you can look at as far as percentage of conversion. But I think if you just look at 100% conversion, the benefit of what that law was supposed to do all of a sudden becomes extremely negative and regressive, and also not actual, because you're not gonna, you're gonna see probably 5-7% of application of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at other, and I think Jamie Housley has better historical data related to other jurisdictions that have done that. So it's just things like that. I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to advise on.
Yeah.
I think the essence of that is in.
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. Yep.
For sure.
Well, I think that, well, a little off track there from the next one, but advise on best ways to support dark sky efforts and limiting noise. If they want us to look at that, we'll certainly take a look at that. I don't know what we can do with it because dark skies is a rural type thing.
You know, it might just be something. I was just at a code update in Ridgefield, and they're specifying the type of light fixtures and making sure that they're angled towards the ground instead of up to the sky. And it could be that, you know, we need to update our lighting standards. We can advise on it. I actually think it's already incorporated into the design standards.
We covered this topic in 2 years ago, I want to say, when we met with council.
Yeah.
I think we if I remember right, we covered this specific topic, and it was mainly because they were consistently getting some complaints from specific neighbors that were having back and forth, and they were frustrated. And it was more so about light direction. And maybe this more, I'm going to guess it's a rehash of that same thing.
Probably.
It's coming up more common. I hadn't seen it in Clark County. It's been a decade, but since then, I've seen it pop up. Seen it to pop up, especially as more of a nuisance harassment deal. I had one in a neighborhood where there's adjacent lot that doesn't like the development that's there, so therefore you use some pretty bright LEDs now, and they're shining them right at somebody's house just to,
attract them. So you need to have a code in place in order to have a code enforcement in place.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with bright lights. There's a lot of stuff you can do at night. You know, play basketball with their angle down. When you take the same lights and you angle them out, you know, I've seen people with lights that can shine them half a mile in the state right
now.
For a neighbor that could be a little concerned.
Sherry, I might just suggest having a line item in there that talks about just, you know, lighting and noise. So that it's on there, the council can see that it's on there. And if we were to take that up, it's going to be a discussion as to what we as a board can do, because it would be more up to staff to propose a code regulation regarding what you just talked about, you know, shining bright lights into somebody's yard. So,
since the board asked for it, it's worth putting it in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're their advisors, so if it's important to them, even if it's a pretty quick one in shielding or recommending the code, if they're asking us to do it, let's put a quick line item on there.
Other incentives that could be in place to promote affordable housing.
Can I just interrupt you, Mike?
Yes.
I just want to remind you guys there's 12 minutes left of this meeting because we stop at
That's right. We only go to an hour and a half.
Just give me a heads up.
Okay. So, I think this is the last one. Incentives to place promote affordable housing. I don't know as if we have that specifically on our work plan or have, or I think we have had in the past. It might not be on there, but Sherry, I think that should go in there. And what we should do is we should maybe talk to some of our clients about that. What would they like to see as an incentive to provide more affordable housing within their development?
Let's add it in. I think that's some ideas. It's going to be a hot topic.
That's a big one. I think that's a good one. That's maybe the biggest one.
Yep.
So far.
So what do we want that one to say?
Explore other incentives that could be in place to promote promote affordable housing.
Yeah, you could almost put
incentives
it in.
Incentives and code changes. Yep. Yeah, we can copy what they put.
Okay, I want to keep it moving. Since
I wouldn't say support. I would say promote.
Yeah.
Like they said in the, because what we're doing is what could the county do? You know, are there, for instance, impact fee reductions?
We don't need to put all that in there.
What's that?
It's good enough.
Yeah.
We don't need to put all that in there.
No. I'm not going into but it's more of a promotion rather than a support.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I think that's pretty good.
Yep.
I think that's the best one we've had for a while.
Okay. So, in looking at the work session dates, we can request for a meeting on February 14th. I would just need the data sent to be able to send to them by the 7th. We can do the 21st, the 28th. You guys just let me know and I'll get that going.
I would say I would be available more on the 21st would work for me, because I think these are like at 10:30.
They're usually in the morning, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So the 21st is going to be, I'm going to be challenged to do any other week, every other week than that. So 21st.
We're talking about March or?
February.
February.
Oh, February. Okay, hold on.
I'm out the 21st of February.
28th
yeah, I
is
cannot,
better for me.
I cannot do the 21st either.
You guys want to move to March?
Does the 6th work?
28th is good for me.
28th, the
NAHD. 28th, I know quite a few of us are out in training. How about we have March 6th?
That works for me.
March 13th, March 20th, March 27th.
I lobby for March 6th.
March 6th
is good.
All right. That works for everybody online?
The 28th is already in spring break, so.
Yeah. Okay, I will schedule for March 6th,
sweet.
And then Sherry and Ryan, I will need the work plan by March 28th so that I can submit it to them.
What time would that be?
I think it's usually at 10.
I think it's at 10 a.m.
10 a.m., okay.
Thank you.
No, that's great. Thank you.
March 6th, 10 a.m.
March 6th. Okay. Yeah.
Are you thinking 2 hours?
We normally do 2 hours.
I know. It's an hour and a half. Hour is not enough. We have really run into issues with just an hour.
Okay, I'll schedule you for 2 hours just in case.
Yeah, hour and a half. I mean, we like to have an open dialogue with them. We've had that before, and it's been really nice. But I think that this work plan is pared down enough that we can quickly go through everything and then kind of have that open dialogue with them. And who knows, maybe we'll get out early. But at least we have it.
The last one was right after a public board of health, and it was, I think we were 2 hours in or something before we even got to start.
So yeah. Oh, and can we have it here? We don't want it in there. We've always had it in here. Last year was the first year that we had it in the hearing room.
That is true, yeah.
I can ask. Yeah. Kathleen, if you're still on, can we have the meeting with the council in the, what is this room called?
Training room
rather than the hearing room. It's just, it felt weird. Yeah, dialogue.
Better facilitation for dialogue back and forth.
Yeah.
Which is what we've, for over a decade, that's what we've
done. That's exactly what we've done.
I've been doing it. I've always known it to be that.
Yeah.
I will
make a request to. Yeah. Just let them know that last year was the first year that it was in the hearing room, and it just didn't have the same feel. It felt like we were testifying.
Yeah.
rather than just having a conversation. And that's what it should be more like, is having an open conversation.
Okay. As a reminder, our next meeting is March 7th. And with that, I will ask if there is any public comment. Is there any members of the public online that would like to speak?
Yes. It's William Elliott. I'm looking for where you're headed with regard to accessory dwelling units, particularly in detached accessory dwelling units.
So that is part of the housing options update plan, and we're doing that as part of our topics, but we're not covering that today. But I do encourage you to go to the public hearing when it's scheduled. There is a work session online, and maybe we could forward, if we can get your contact info, we can send you the proposed code that the county just had a work session on a week or two ago, and then there will be a hearing on that. Just so you know, though, are you in the rural or urban area?
Rural.
Okay. Right now, state law prohibits detached ADUs in the rural area. They don't actually prohibit it. You have to count it towards density, which is basically prohibiting it. There is a lot of effort right now, and there's a state law. It's going through committee. It is proposed at the state level to change that rule. And once that rule is changed, it would be implemented at the county level. So there's a pretty good chance at this point, if it passes, that they will be allowed in the future detached ADUs in the rural area.
Very well. Yeah, and there are other localities around the state that have adopted those things, such as Bremerton and a couple of other jurisdictions that have moved forward on that. And yep. I appreciate your work on that.
Yep. And those are not GMA counties. That's the reason why they've moved forward, and we have not been able to. But once it's adopted and the laws are changed at the state level, I would assume that the county would adopt them unless they choose to be less restrictive, which they normally are not. So.
Fine. And if that information you talked about can be forwarded to me at my email, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Perhaps you can put your email in the chat, and then is that your email, William.m.elliott@outlook.com?
That's correct.
Well, there you go.
Thank you for attending, William.
Yeah, thanks, William. Is there any other members of the public online that would like to comment? All right, hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.